The early morning sun began to rise, came through the window, and it crept into his eyes. It woke him up, and it wasn't because he wanted to wake up. He would have rather have slept and slumbered, but when he opened his eyes, he realized that he had a throbbing headache. And finally, once he was able to get his bearings and figure out where he was, he put his feet down on the ground, and he felt as if he weighed more today than he did yesterday. He realized that he needed to go to the restroom, and so as he began to walk to the restroom, he remembered that he needed to check the drawer to see if there was any money left. So he walked over to the furniture, and he pulled out the drawer, and lo and behold, there was no money. A man in a strange land with no money and no friends at all. I mean, after all, the only reason his friends wanted to be friends with him in the first place was now gone. What would he do? I mean, he had left home before he had acquired any skills that were of any worth. He thought to himself, well, maybe I could secure a job of manual labor and I could do the brunt work. But the more and more that he looked for a job in the faraway country, the less and less opportunities he found, until one day an opportunity was laid at his feet. There was an opening at a farm for a feeder of swine. I mean, that's revolting considering the fact that he was a Jew and considered swine to be unclean. But it was the only opportunity that he had. And so there he found himself within the pig pen, and he began to have some disgusting thoughts. I mean, after all, he was hungry, he had not ate, he had no money to secure himself some food. So he began to think, well, what if I were to feed myself some of these pods that I am feeding the swine? And maybe that would hold my hunger over until I got paid. And then I would be able to secure some food for myself. He was starving. And as he was in the pig pen, he was faced with two choices. First, the thought popped into his mind that, you know, I could probably die right here in this pig pen. Or secondly, I suppose that I could go home. Oh, but that's a ridiculous thought. I mean, can you think about what my brother would say and how my father would treat me after all the things that I have done against him? But what if I did go home? What could I do? Well, I know one thing that I could do. I could eat. I mean, in my father's house is bread enough and to spare. Isn't it ironic that the servants have enough food to eat while the son starves? I've always been good at speaking, so maybe I could prepare a speech for my father. But what would I say? Well, maybe it could go a little bit like this. Father, I have sinned against heaven and before your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called one of your sons. Make me like one of your hired servants. Yes, I suppose that if I went home, that is what I could do. Well, you know the rest of the story. What does the boy choose to do? I know that the parable of the prodigal son is not about the father, it's about the son. More often, it's about the son who stayed home, because that was really the prodigal son who refused to forgive his brother for his wayward lifestyle, even though he had repented and sought his father's forgiveness. But you realize that the parable of the prodigal son falls apart without the father. To use mathematical terms with you for a second, the brothers are variables, but the father is a constant. He's stable. He's consistent. You know that father loves his boys no matter what. But then you got one son on one hand who decided to take his portion of the inheritance and go into a faraway country and there squander it in riotous living. He really couldn't be depended upon. And then you got the other son, on the other hand, who after his brother decided that he wanted to come home and wanted to seek his father's forgiveness, he refused to forgive, and he has a little bit of a pride and anger problem. He's not real dependable either. The father is the one who holds the parable of the prodigal son together. This evening, what I want to do for just a few minutes is I want to observe with you four pillars from Luke chapter 15 that held the father's home and the parable of the prodigal son together despite the turmoil that was going on in the lives of his children. These are four pillars that we as fathers in the home ought to seek to strive after ourselves, because the father in the parable of the prodigal son was the father who got it right. Here's the first. In his home, holiness was pursued. Now I want you to read with me starting in verse 11. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me." And so he divided to them his livelihood. Not many days after the younger son gathered all together, he journeyed to a far country, and there he wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Now, I would imagine that all of us would believe that the father in the parable of the prodigal son was certainly a father who hated the devil, but he loved God. Have you ever thought about this? Why was it the case that when the son decided that he wanted to go and pursue riotous living in the faraway country, that he had to leave his father's house? I suppose that the answer is real simple, right? I mean, he knew he had to leave his father's house because his father would not allow him to pursue prodigal living in his home. He could not pursue riotous living in the faraway country in a home that pursued the things of God. His father was not going to let sin come into his home. I don't have to tell you that today we have a crisis on our hands in the nation in which we live, of fathers. And that becomes even more grave when you talk about those fathers that are not a spiritual influence nor a spiritual example to their children. And I suppose that there's really three different attitudes that fathers could take as it pertains to sin in their home. The first attitude that a father could take as it pertains to sin in his home would be, well, you know, kids will be kids, and you got to let them sow their wild oats. And so basically what that father was saying is this: if they pursue sin in this house, they were going to pursue it anyway, and I would rather them pursue sin and sow their wild oats while they're teenagers. Well, what's the problem with that? Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he shall also reap. You might believe that you're allowing your child to sow wild oats, but really what you're doing is you're bringing consequences of sowing wild oats into their future. And one day when they begin to sow the wild oats and they reap the wild oats that they have sown, they're going to have all kinds of things come to their life that will be detrimental, things that they do not want. And the only way to reap something different than what you've sown is to go all the way back to the beginning and sow something different. I suppose the second attitude that a father could take as it pertains to sin in his house would be this: well, you know, if they're going to sin, at least they would sin under my supervision. I would rather them not, but at least I'll be there when they do it. I think we have a tendency to view allowing our child to sin as allowing them freedom. Oh, I'm just allowing them a little freedom. I'm loosening the chain a little bit and so they can have the freedom that they want. But in actuality, if you're allowing your child freedom so that they can sin, you're not allowing them freedom. You're bringing them into bondage, and the chain is going to choke them out spiritually. And you know, eventually, it's not going to go the way you thought it would. But then the third attitude that a father could have as it pertains to sin in his house is, I suppose, the attitude that the father in the parable of the prodigal son possessed. My children will not pursue sin in this house. My children will not pursue sin in this house. Not only did this father make a stand regarding sin in his home, his children knew the stand that their father took regarding sin in the home. Oh, well, what's the big deal about sin in my house? a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Well, that's what Paul said, but what's he mean? You know how leaven works. You ever made bread? Leaven is what brings that bread to rise. And essentially what the Apostle Paul is saying is this, that if you allow a little leaven into the church, then that leaven is going to spread throughout the church and it will contaminate the entire church. Well, the church goes as the home goes. And I suppose that's the case in the home as well. That if you allow a little leaven into the home, that leaven will eventually contaminate the entire home. Do you really believe that if you allow Satan an inch into your child's heart, that he will be content with an inch? And do you suppose that if you allow Satan to have a foot in your child's heart, he would be content with a foot? Oh no, from the very beginning of time, Satan has always had numbers in mind. You think about Genesis chapter 3 when it comes to Eve. Did he only want to bring Eve into sin? That's funny. He had all of God's creation in mind. It went from Eve. Oh, then it went into Adam, into Cain, and into Abel. And eventually Cain rose up and he killed his brother Abel. And Hebrews chapter 11 says, Abel's blood still speaks today. You see, it's cheap hypocrisy if we clean sin out of our heart, but we let sin live and thrive in our home. That's not what the father in the parable of the prodigal son was allowing to do. Happen. In fact, his son knew that, and so he left. Here's pillar number two. In his home, justice and kindness were lived. Notice verse 17 with me. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. You know, when the son is in the pig pen of sin, and he thinks about his father in one of the most detrimental moments in his life, what comes to his mind? Does he think about his father's harshness? No, no, no. Does he think about his father's arrogance? No, no, no. He thinks about his father's kindness, but he wasn't just kind to some people. He was kind to all people, even those who would have been considered the lowest in society, the servants. Even they were treated with kindness and respect. When your children find themselves in desperate moments in their life, and they're in need of help, just as the prodigal son was in need of help in that pig pen of sin, what do they think when they think about you? I pray that your children see you treat the elderly with love and respect. Pure and undefiled religion before God is this. I pray that your children see you treat strangers with hospitality. Because some have unwittingly entertained angels. Hebrews 13, verse 2. And I pray that your children see you pray for your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Matthew 5 and verse 44. And I pray that your children see you love their mother. Because a man who does not love himself cannot love his wife. But a man who loves himself in a healthy way can certainly love his wife, Ephesians 5 and verse 28, and he can build a life that is great for his wife and his children. Pillar number three, in his home, fairness and mercy were mingled. Verse 20, he arose and he came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I'm no longer worthy to be called one of your son. Did you notice the difference in the speech? If you go back to verse 18, when he prepared the speech in the pig pen of sin, he said, I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. But in verse 21, he recites this speech, but it's shorter. He doesn't mention the thing about one of his father's hired servants. When the son found himself in the pig pen of sin, the Bible says he came to himself. That might be the greatest phrase in the entirety of this parable because it implies that he wasn't himself before. But finally, once he came to himself, he recognized that his pursuit of sinfulness was over, and now his pursuit of righteousness had begun. For him to pursue righteousness, though, he had to return to his father, the image of righteousness in his mind. I've got a question for you. How did the son in the parable of the prodigal son know that taking his father's inheritance, going away to a faraway country, squandering it in riotous or prodigal living was wrong? And then the first sentence that he prepares when he is preparing this speech for his father, he says, I have sinned against heaven. How did the son know that what he had done was a sin? And the answer is, his father had certainly taught him. The principles which his father had instilled within him still guided him. Yes, he had left his father's house, but those moral principles his father had engrafted within his heart were still guiding his actions. It might be the case that you have a child who's in a lost condition, who's left your home. If you engrafted those biblical and moral principles into their heart, once they know the truth, they can't unknow the truth. You see, in this man's home, there was balance. The father most certainly was a man of principle. His son knew that he could not pursue a life of prodigal living in his father's house, so therefore he had to leave and go to a faraway country. But then when his son wanted to return home and receive the forgiveness that only his father could bestow upon him, he recognized that his father was not a man who would hold his past over his head. He was not a man who would deal with him with cruelty. He was not a man who would deal with him in an arrogant way. He was a man who would forgive him when he came home. Do you find it impressive that even after the prodigal son greets his father, he still delivers the speech that he had prepared back in the pig pen of sin? Now, why is that the case? Well, it could be because this son knew that his father was a man of principle. He understood the seriousness of his sinfulness and that his father needed to know. He recognized what he had done and he wanted to make it right. And incidentally, why did the father wait for the son to come home and not send for him? I mean, after all, this father seems to be a man of means. He has many servants at his disposal. He's wealthy. He could afford to send his servants into that faraway country to go and find that son that had been lost. Why did he wait for his son to come to him? Perhaps it could be because the father knew he could go and get his son out of the faraway country, but he couldn't take the faraway country out of his son. Why is this parable so sweet? Why is it so beloved? Perhaps one of the most beloved parables in all the Bible, if not the most beloved parable in all the Bible. Well, I want to assert to you this evening, it doesn't have anything to do with the son. I mean, it might have a little bit to do with him. I mean, after all, he was penitent. He wanted to make changes in his life. It reminds us that no matter how low we go in this life, we can always come home to our God. But the reason this parable is so sweet and it's so beloved is because of the mercy of the Father. You see, mercy is a step above sympathy. Sympathy is feeling sorry for someone. Mercy is trying to get into their shoes to understand why that someone did what they did, to try to see it from their perspective, but also remaining convicted of what you hold near and dear to your heart. The son didn't deserve forgiveness. He had sinned against his father. But he received mercy. You see, people have a tendency to view God as only the God of love. And he is. God is love. But God is also a God of principle that will never violate any principle or promise that he has set forth within his holy inspired word. And if we are to be forgiven, that forgiveness must take place first in the heart of God, and it must take place on His terms. Here's the fourth and final pillar I want to discuss with you this evening. In His home, the pursuit of righteousness was rejoiced. But the father said to his servants, "Bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. Don't miss it. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to be merry. When the prodigal son returns home, what happens? Well, the father sends for his servants. He brings out the best robe. He puts it on him. He brings out a ring and he puts it on his finger. He brings out sandals and he puts it on his feet, because you see, only servants went barefoot. Sons wore shoes. But don't miss this part. They had a feast of celebration. And the father makes a statement that he will make on two separate occasions in this parable. First, the statement is made in verse 24. "For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And then he will make it as the very last statement in this parable in verse 32. "For your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and now is found." You realize that that statement is found in all three parables in Luke chapter 15. It's found in the parable of the lost coin, verse 9. "Rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I lost." And it's found in the parable of the lost sheep, verse 6. "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost." But what's the difference? Well, the parable of the prodigal son is speaking about a lost child. It's different when you're talking about a lost piece of money, and it's different when you're talking about a lost animal than it is when you're talking about a lost child. You see, this father was not a pretender. Having love and compassion for your child is not pretending they are spiritually alive when they are spiritually dead. This father was not a pretender. This father was realistic. He called it for what it was. He realized that he had a son that was in a lost condition. He woke up to the fact that if his son never came home and never repented, he would stay in that faraway country and there he would die. One of the harshest and most sobering reality that any parent might have to come to grips with is the very thought that a child might be in a lost spiritual condition. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 6, "Love does not rejoice in iniquity." What's iniquity? Sin. For you to say that you love your child, yet you are rejoicing in their iniquity, you are rejoicing in their sinful lifestyle, is not love, it's apathy, it's indifference. And it's not coming to the realistic state that the Bible has presented as it regards to your child fact, as indicated by this parable, it's apparent that the father waited day in and day out for the return of his son every night and every day. When a parent has a lost child, what do? They pray and they pray and they pray and they pray that child is going to come home. Notice that it says, and while he was still afar off. I've got an idea. If the father had not been watching for his son, how could he see him afar off? True love rejoices over the right things. It does not rejoice in iniquity. That's not love. It rejoices in righteousness. On April 9th of 1865, at the Appomattox Courthouse in Appomattox, Virginia, General Robert E. Lee surrendered to Union General Ulysses S. Grant. And with the war effectively over, now the greater question would be asked. What would happen to those who were in the Confederate Army and who had been Confederate rebels who had committed treason? Some people believe that vengeance would certainly occur, and others believe that it would be a no-brainer, that execution would happen. And so that most important question finally came to the most powerful man in all the land, the President of the United States of America, my favorite president, Abraham Lincoln. And the reporter asked him the question, what will you do with the Confederate rebels who committed treason? And Lincoln said, I will treat them as if they never left. What we find in the parable of the prodigal son is a father who treated his lost child as if he never lived. I know this parable is not about the father. I know it's about the son, more so about the son who stayed home than the son who went away to that faraway country, because that son who stayed home, well, he was just prideful and arrogant and refused to forgive his brother for what he had done. But without the father in this parable, the home and the parable fall apart.